First of all, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to our good friend David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, David.
Morning. Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much. So let's talk about this story we reported yesterday. An atomic smuggling ring, a Swiss family acting as a mole for the CIA, an infamous Pakistani nuclear architect called A.Q. Khan, a seven-year effort by the CIA to squash an investigation. A judge has now recommended that the Swiss suspects in this case actually be prosecuted for aiding A.Q. Khan. Bring us up to date on what this latest episode of this story actually means.
Well, this isn't your sort of ordinary Swiss Family Robinson out here. This is the Tinner family, and father and two sons were central elements of the A.Q. Khan network. Now, Abdul Qadir Khan, for those listeners who may have forgotten his tale, was the man who helped become the architect of the Pakistani nuclear program, and then turned around and developed the world's largest black market in nuclear goods. He's the one who sold the centrifuge designs to Iran and to North Korea. In fact, those centrifuges we were talking about a few weeks ago that we saw in North Korea were actually of the design that A.Q. Khan sold about 10 years ago to them. So the Tinners were helping him out with the machining of a lot of this equipment. But it turns out that in return for a few million dollars, they were also helping out the CIA, who had turned them and were using them as a window into the Khan network. And the CIA had worked with them, but also broke in at various moments to one or two of their houses and found bomb designs, a Chinese design, two Pakistani designs on their computers, not only in Switzerland but around the world. One of the interesting issues that may come out if they end up going to trial is they're going to say, we're not nuclear traffickers. We were helping the CIA. And the reason the CIA doesn't want to see this go to trial is that it would reveal a lot of their techniques, but it may also reveal a few of their missteps, like why they left all of these designs out there on those computers where they could and may have been spread around later on.
You know, David Sanger, it raises a really interesting kind of overarching principle of how the CIA operates in a situation like this. Obviously, they need to have a window into continuing operations without rolling them up too early, because then they lose the chance of getting the people who are really sort of controlling the strings here, the puppeteers. But you also run the risk of actually aiding nuclear proliferation in a situation like this. Has this judge decided that somehow this crosses a line from intelligence to actually aiding something that is actually illegal?
Well, after a two-year investigation, he came to the conclusion that these folks were nuclear traffickers, even if they were helping the CIA. But part of the difficulty that he ran into in putting his case together was that the CIA had convinced the Swiss government, which was opposing this investigation, to destroy most of the evidence that they had seized from the Tinners. So when the Tinner family goes on trial, if, in fact, they're finally indicted — this was just a recommendation to the Attorney General — they're going to say, where's the evidence? The government destroyed it, including evidence that might end up working in favor of the defendants.
You know, you've covered this story for years as Chief Washington Correspondent for our partner at The New York Times. I'm wondering how you balance the, fairly significant appetite you might have to actually see what information might come out at this trial versus your understanding that making it public could go way beyond the kind of WikiLeaks controversy in reducing the CIA's ability to monitor nuclear proliferation.
Well, you know, John, in this case, a lot of it is public. My colleague Bill Broad and I first wrote about the Tinners acting on the CIA's behalf in 2008. And there's a fabulous new book that is coming out next month called Fallout, which was written by Doug France, who used to be investigations editor for the Times when we were just beginning our A.Q. Khan investigations in 2003, and his wife, Catherine Collins, that describes a lot of the CIA's interactions with the Tinners. So whether there's a trial or not, I think that enough time has passed here and enough of the players have begun to talk that most of that's going to be out in any case.
So the CIA doesn't have much to worry about here, and they're basically making a case on principle.
Well, there's a case on principle. There is, however, a bit of an embarrassment factor, and that's this, that President Bush, during right after AQ Khan was seized by the Pakistanis and put on house arrest, he's since been released, declared that the entire Khan network had been broken up. And in Pakistan, that may be true. But the fact of the matter is that Khan had a lot of people working for him, like the Tinners, most of whom have never been prosecuted, some of whom are still in business.
Hmm.
And it's not as if just because AQ Khan may not be operating in this territory that no one else is.
So finally, what is a day in the life of AQ Khan like right now? Where does he stand at this moment? Remind us.
You know, he doesn't call. He doesn't write. I haven't even gotten a Christmas card. So we're not entirely certain what he's doing, but he lives in a very lovely house on the edges of Islamabad. He is watched, but very loosely, by Pakistani authorities. And the big issue from the United States is to make sure that he doesn't get back in business. Now, the Pakistanis may be our close allies, or at moments may not be, but what they have never let happen is they have never let the CIA or international arms inspectors interview AQ Khan, because we assume they are concerned about what he might say about who else in the Pakistani government knew about what he was selling to North Korea, to Iran, to Libya. And there's always the possibility we've missed a few countries.
Well, that raises the question, is there a successor to AQ Khan? And do U.S. intelligence and international arms inspectors believe there might be a successor to AQ Khan out there?
John, we have to assume there is, because it's an extraordinarily profitable business and there are a lot of countries that are interested in the technology.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. Merry Christmas to you. And you're doing that Washington report on WQXR, right?
That's right. Every Monday morning we do that.
Every Monday morning you can hear David Sanger on WQXR, the best classical music station in the world. It's also a partner station of New York Public Radio. David Sanger, thanks so much.
Thank you.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times, talking about a Swiss magistrate's decision to recommend prosecution for Frederick Tinner and his two sons for aiding the AQ Khan illicit nuclear network.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.